Welcome to Jesus-Centric Leadership. I'm Donna. I'm here with Pastor Josh. We have Thomas at the table with us again today. Good to see you. And we are talking about speaking truth in leadership. Now, this is kind of a different kind of truth. We've talked a lot about truth. We had Jonathan on where we really went at truth as a whole. But this is challenging us as leaders as to when we speak truth and when we don't. Now, before we went on the air, we were talking a little bit about our Enneagrams. And if you're familiar with that, Thomas and I are both eights. Pastor, what are you?
Three.
Okay. And what does that mean? Can you explain that?
So essentially, the heart behind why I do things is I want to be successful, which is, again, a great thing. Like, God has wired that into me, and he wants his church to be successful. So there's a great redeeming value in that. But the challenge of it is sometimes if I'm not careful, my success can be tied to how I make people think and feel. So sometimes speaking truth is, there's a little bit of a burden because I don't want to speak the truth so hard to push people away, which we've had, you know, we've had conversations about that before. Right. But that would be my personality.
Which honestly is a blessing in your role, because that could be a whole big spoonful. Whereas Thomas and I might have a great big spoonful, here's some truth, and we're off to the next thing. And not that either of us want to hurt people at
right.
all, but we view maybe speaking that truth in a little bit of a different way.
Yeah. An example that comes to mind of like a kind of a practical example, this isn't political by any means, so maybe I'll get in trouble, but when the COVID thing was like in full height and like panic everywhere and like there was a disease running around the earth, like there were, like I was one that didn't want to get vaccinated right away because there was like that truth element for me. I was like, I want to speak truth. Like, I don't believe this is the right thing at the time. But then there was the other side of like, okay, people want to get vaccinated so they can love people well and they can be in the presence. And it's like that might be more Josh and I'm on the other side. Like, which one of those is right? Like, I don't think one is more right over the other. Like, we want to speak truth and we want to be grace-filled and we want to love people. And it's like, the challenge for Christians, how do we bring those two together?
Yeah, and I got it right away because I wanted to get into the nursing home because I had people that I hadn't seen in the nursing home. I wanted to take them communion. It ended up not mattering to get in the nursing home, but yeah, like.
And I'm sneaking into the hospital, getting the full gown with the oxygen thing, looking like I'm on Grey's Anatomy or something, yeah. All right, so I want to reel it back a little bit. I've also heard that what you do also might depend a little bit on where you land on the Enneagram. You work with a congregation of people that have a lot of different feelings and thoughts and views on faith and all these different things. You currently work with students that may need that ability for somebody to speak that truth and love a little bit more in a different way. So each one of those has its gifts. We don't want to pigeonhole it as, oh, this is this, or this is good, this is bad, or whatever. But there, that's a little bit of where we're coming from as we talk about leadership and speaking truth.
Yeah, no, and I would agree. And I think the thing that, like, so you can pigeonhole yourself into where you are, or you can see how who you are affects who you're supposed to be in Christ. And so that's like the thing that I'm learning about myself is that I am naturally a little worried about what people think. And that's not always a good thing. And so I have people in my life that are challenging me to be a little more blunt. And so I say comments on this podcast a little more bluntly than I might have before because I have people that challenge me. And I think that's like, that would be my big thing is how are we walking that balance of maybe truth and steady, and how are we letting other people speak into us how we need to grow in those areas?
Yeah, I was just going to say the word steady because I've also been challenged by you of, hey, this is a cool gift that you have, the ability to point out truth and speak truth, but I need you to be steady in that and not just always maybe kind of going off the rails a little bit or with this passion that sometimes picking the words as I say this is a little bit more challenging. But each one, wherever you land on this, as you speak truth, it comes with its challenges and it comes with its blessings, right?
Yeah. And that's the reality. And that's why I think community is so important for us to learn you know, the Enneagram would say the positives of your personality and the shadow side. Like all of us have a shadow side that's built into who we are. And the hope is that Christ redeems that, right? He sanctifies that through the Christian community. And what comes out is mostly the good in us, or more good in us than bad in us. But I think we have to realize that, you know, we all have those positive and we all have those shadow sides.
So how is this podcast helpful to our leaders who are moms, our leaders, you know, men in marriages? How is it helpful for the student that's in high school on the soccer team? How is this helpful to talk about this concept, speaking truth?
Yeah, well, I think because we are going to have opportunities to speak God's truth, like, and the world around us, I would say right now especially, they don't need more of my opinions or my thoughts and feelings. They need more of God's truth. Like, that's what we all need.
In love.
Yeah, in love, right? And there's always that balance. But the reality is, yeah, there needs to be more truth in this world. And not more of somebody's version of truth, but God's truth, right? And so how do we become conduits of that truth?
Mm. Yeah. Do you want to add anything to that?
No, I'm good.
Good. Thanks, Tom. Wow, a lot of words today. So we wanted to look at Esther. And so I'm going to give you a second to grab your Bibles if you want. We are in the Old Testament. Esther, tell us a little bit why you picked Esther as a place to camp on as we talk about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think you did, Donna, but, you know, that's okay. But I'll act like it was, no. I think there's a lot of good in Esther, and maybe just a little bit of backstory of the context of Easter. So the Jews were living in Jerusalem, God's promised land. The Babylonians came in, and it kind of parallels Daniel a little bit, because the Babylonians came in, they bring the Jews into captivity, and kind of the whoever they thought was the good Jews kind of had somewhat of positions in the Jewish government, which the Babylonians, they didn't always like that. And so you see that animosity, right? Daniel's thrown in the lion's den because of that animosity. Esther's chock full of that animosity too, that people don't like the Jews, that they see them as second-class citizens, they see them as bad people and somebody that needs to be destroyed. And so that's kind of the context that the story of Esther is in. And I think the value of it is, as you'll see, Esther kind of has a decision to make that's kind of a big one. And it has to do with, is she going to speak the truth or is she going to stay silent and preserve herself?
Yeah. And it's hard to speak truth.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot is at stake at her. So to kind of dive in, a lot is at stake for her. So to set up the story, the, you know, spark notes of the story, and you can read it. It's 10 chapters, but is that there's a queen, Queen Vashti, and Queen Vashti basically kind of ignores the king and ignores his rules, and so she gets removed from being the queen. And so Queen Vashti kind of gets replaced then with Esther. And so Esther's Jewish. And the Jewish people, by this guy named Haman, Haman wants to destroy all the Jews. So he kind of gets the king to make this law that basically allows them to get rid of the Jews, to have a, you know, mass extermination of everyone who's Jewish.
And they don't know that Esther's Jewish, right?
They don't.
Yeah.
So Mordecai, her guardian, Mordecai is saying, hey, don't tell anybody you're Jewish. But then her people get threatened and Mordecai comes back to her again. And that's where I do want to read. So this is
Esther 4,
verse 14. For if you keep silent at this time, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. And so basically, this is said in the context of Esther's trying to decide, do I go to the king and risk him seeing me as subversive and get rid of me like he did my predecessor, the other queen, or do I not? right? Do I play it safe for myself, or do I speak up? Do I speak with God's truth that all people are valuable? Do I speak up with that truth, or do I stay silent? That's really what she's kind of dealing with. And again, Mordecai's words are so good. Maybe you were placed for such a time as this, which when speaking truth, like, that's a question we do have to ask ourselves. Like, am I called to speak truth in this situation?
Right.
And sometimes the answer will be no, and sometimes it'll be yes. But I think we have to at least ask ourselves, at a minimum, we have to ask ourselves this question, if I'm called to speak truth here.
Yeah. You're looking at me like I got.
Well, I know. I thought you were going to say more. You're like, yeah.
Do you want to hear the end of the story? Then,
yeah. Go ahead. Thank you.
Yeah. So let's. we're totally not sure where we're derailed. Going.
That's why they don't invite me that much.
So the end of the story is Queen Esther does decide to speak up. And so she actually has a dinner party, and she does it two nights in a row, and she invites Haman, who wants to kill the Jews, and she invites the king. And so they come, and on the second night, Queen Esther basically says, hey, someone wants to kill me and my people. And she points out Haman, and Haman is hung on the gallows, and the Jews are saved. And it's this cool story that it all worked out for Queen Esther to speak truth. But it was a dicey situation, right? It could have gone either way. The king could have gotten rid of her just like that.
So as a leader, how do you discern when it's your now? How do you discern that you were made for this moment, for such a time as this? How do you discern if this is something I've got to just be steady and maybe hold that back a little bit, or to speak into it?
So I think one aspect of discerning that, and this isn't all of it, but one aspect that Esther teaches us is that it has to be about more than just you. So if your reason for speaking truth is, well, this is affecting me, I might give it a lot longer pause before I say anything. Now, I'm not opposed to you setting boundaries. I'm not opposed to you, you know, doing the right thing for you. But I think Queen Esther, part of her doing it wasn't just, oh, this is going to affect me, but rather it was going to affect a whole lot of people around her. And so I think, like, we have to put that in context. I think we should be quicker to speak the truth when there's more at stake than just what's best for me. And so I think that's one criteria, that when we're speaking truth, God speaks truth in the Bible because it's good for all people. Do we speak truth because there's something in it for me, or there's something in it for a whole lot of people? And I think that should be one criteria that I think the book of Esther teaches us.
Right. I think another criteria needs to be that we're not doing it out of emotion. I think that's something you've really been able to help me as a leader, is to understand. Sometimes I want to take a hill. I want to speak truth. Let's go. Somebody I care about's being hurt, or something I believe in isn't going to happen. And it's not that those thoughts, feelings are wrong, but that is an emotion. And it's a lot, and it can be hard and heavy. Whereas I need to take a more balanced, pray as you talk about, maybe rest in that, and then come back and do it with a, for lack of a better word, a steadiness.
Yeah,
that is very counter the way I first want to approach it.
Yeah, and I think if we can't, like, let's let God carry the emotion of truth, and let's just carry the truth of truth, right? And I think, like, I picked it up somewhere that when we correct or criticize or tell somebody there's a place they need to grow or be different or be better, then we do that without emotion. When we praise with emotion. We correct, we rebuke, we speak truth with without emotion. We just let it be. And I think that would help people receive the truth better if we could take the emotion out of it.
But there's also a place for emotion, right? Yeah, go ahead, Thomas.
I guess I'm sitting here disagreeing a bit because, like, what if that truth you're speaking into someone in an emotional impactful way is what kind of kicks them off? Like, I could sit here and give someone a cold, callous truth, and maybe that's right for a certain individual, but there's something, like, God wired us with emotions for a reason, and to just kind of throw it out of, I guess, the option or whatever, like, you're kind of, I don't know, your truth could be more impactful with emotion tied to it. And I mean, but then your emotions can also make that hard to receive, which I think is what we're wrestling with.
Yeah, I think for me, I kind of get it because I'm a verbal processor. So you get that emotion behind my verbal processing, and it can be a whole lot. I think it's taking, for me, I have to pause. Whether it's somebody I trust and doing that verbal processing with that emotion behind it, and then realizing, okay, I've got to step back, I've got to pray about it, I've got to do the next right thing once I've done that. But I don't think everybody can always handle or needs to my verbal processing with that heat of emotion. Are there moments that, yeah, I'm going to speak some hard truth and I need you to hear this, that that's a right move? Yes, but not always in that first instant moment. Because I've noticed myself, I can come with a lot of heat on something, and that's not necessarily good for somebody to have to digest. Now, my son says it this way. He says, you guys in the church operate a whole different way. Because he's in construction. In the construction world, they're just saying it the way it is. You mess this up, and I'm not going to use the language that they might use in the construction world, right? But there's a whole lot of aggressive heat in leadership in the construction world. There might be in a lot of worlds that are out there. So how do we speak to that also? How do we speak the truth in leadership, but also understand that, well, you may not understand where I'm, the world I'm working in.
So I would challenge you as a leader that, like, if you don't know that your emotion is helpful for the other person, that you get it out of there, right? Like, because as a leader, like, and we're as Christians, we're supposed to love the other person more than we love ourselves. Like, I think a lot of times when we use emotion, it's because I'm feeling it and I want to get it out. And I'm sorry, but that's just thinking about yourself. Like, I'm not asking the question, is this emotion good for you? Like, I'm asking, oh, I'm feeling this way and I have every right to feel this way, so I'm going to let my emotion out. No, that's what you use counseling for. You use counseling to get your emotion out. You don't use the people you're leading or the people you want to speak truth to get your emotion out.
Or a trusted individual.
Yeah.
Right.
And a counselor, a trusted individual, a friend. Like, yeah, share your thoughts and feelings with friends. There's safe places to do that. But I think, like, emotions spin people up to a different level than just saying it does. And so I think, like, when we're having a hard conversation, as a leader, as a friend who's speaking truth, like, if I don't know that my emotions are helpful, then maybe I shouldn't use them. And I've learned, and from you, like, you told me one time to raise your voice at my son. And so I use that sometimes. I show my emotions to my kids, and if sometimes I even have to manufacture them so they know it's a big deal. But I do that not because I'm reacting. I need to take a breath and make sure I'm not reacting, but I'm making sure that I'm leading. Because as leaders, we're called not to react. We're called to do what's best for the person around us. That's the value.
And it seems like we're talking about our opposite ends here are, am I in my head because I want to really please the people that I'm leading, or am I being emoting so much that I'm emoting over the people that I'm leading? Because the opposite can be true too of leading with our emotions is, well, I'm holding it back because I don't want to hurt you. I don't want to offend you. I don't want to frustrate you.
Yeah.
And then we're stalled out in leadership because we're not using that voice that God gave us. So, yeah. So the other individual that we looked at was Jesus. And how do you feel like Jesus was this middle? Like, that's where we really want to be. How did he speak truth and leadership without emoting all over people and without just kind of stalling out sometimes?
Well, I mean, he's the Son of God, so he knows what people need, so he kind of has that advantage. But I think that, I mean, the big takeaway from Jesus, I would say that he did both. And so I don't want to make this seem like we never use our emotions.
Right.
But I also don't want you to get the permission to just emote all over. And I think Jesus did that. There's sometimes where we hear and feel his emotions, and there's sometimes where he just kind of said it how it was. Right. Like I think of, right, he's getting ready to go to the cross and he's talking with Pilate. And anyway, when I read that, I don't see any emotion. He's getting ready to die. He just cried tears of blood. And then he gets in front of Pilate and he's just kind of like, you know, Pilate's like, what is truth? And Jesus, in my mind, when I read it, he just kind of looks at himself and he's kind of like, well, I'm truth. Like, it's me, right? Like, he's kind of just, like, he could be really emotional at that moment. He has every reason to be emotional, but he probably realizes, and well, he's the Son of God, so he realizes that that's not going to change Pilate's mind if he starts emoting, right? So he's just going to speak it to Pilate as it's true, right? And that calm steadiness just speaks volumes to Pilate, because Pilate does want to free him, right?
I think the one that stands out to me, I don't know if it played out this way, but in my mind, this is how it plays out, is when he came back and they're having breakfast by the water, right?
After he rose again. Right?
Yeah, after he rose. And I kind of envision, it's like, hey, Peter, let's go for a walk, right? And he asked him three times, right? He did. I would have thrown down in front of the disciples.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? You said that you would walk with me. You're the person I'm building my church on.
Yeah.
And then you go and bail on me. How can I even trust you? I would have thrown down. And that's not all the way he does it. He does it with that steadiness, with that, I'm just going to ask you three times, you know?
But he doesn't do my MO either, which would be my MO. My naturalness is I would just avoid it. I would just say, yeah, you, Peter, we're good. Like, we're good now, right? But like, you know, but he speaks the truth and he does it well and he doesn't shy away from it. Like, those are hard words he says to Peter. Again, and I think it is. I think it's without emotion. Because I think emotion probably would have been too much for Peter to handle because it was hard enough the way it was, but he doesn't avoid it.
But he gets right to the point.
He does.
Then feed my lambs.
Yeah.
Then feed my sheep, right?
It's worth bringing up what we've been talking about behind the scenes of Jesus storming the temple.
And you wanted to go there, didn't you?
Well, it came up because it's like this emotion-fueled thing, but also like he's speaking truth, and it's like, we see the example of Peter, okay, like he is gentle with Peter, like he doesn't back away from what Peter did. Mm-hmm. He forgives Peter at the end of it. And like that's that gentle, kind Jesus that we know. But then we don't always look at this side of Jesus, but like Jesus saw his father's house being swarmed by merchant and sin and greed and all sorts of things, and that angers him. And you can talk about the whip thing, but like he whips people out of that in his frustration. It's a godly anger, and it's the truth. Like the truth is, like his temple has been disgraced by these people.
So I'm going to pause you there, and I do want to go into the whip. Talk a little bit about your theory behind the whip, and I think that really supports this all the more.
Yeah. So the Bible, I believe the text is, and I don't know if you have it.
I'll find it.
Yeah, but it's, and again, I'm paraphrasing, but the text is that he made a whip and then he drove everybody out of the temple. And so when we hear made a whip, we think, oh, that's a quick thing. You go to Walmart, you make a whip. You
get a whip. Right, because he's mad right now.
Yeah, but probably if he actually made a whip that would be useful in an agricultural society, like it probably took a few hours to make the whip. And so even when he uses, and this kind of supports my argument, was been when we use our emotion, we decide to use it. We choose to use it. We choose to use it for the betterment of people, right? I choose to raise my voice at my kid because he needs to know that this matters to me, right? Jesus chose to let his anger kind of go so that this would matter to his people. And so I think that's really important, that he chose to use his emotion, not let his emotion choose to run you.
Right. And sitting there for a couple hours weaving this, it was a very decisive moment.
I'm looking through scriptures. I got one more, but so far, like, Mark hasn't said he's made the whip. It just says he drove out the temple. And then Luke hasn't said either. There's John, which I'll turn to here, but because everyone knows the whip. So
we may have to put it in the footnotes, and I'll find the task text. But one of them says that it at least infers that he makes a whip. And so,
yeah. So we're going to put in the footnotes?
No. Oh, okay. Okay, here it is. John 2:15. And making a whip of cords, he drove them all out of the temple with the sheep and oxen, and he poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. So it's in John.
Making, yeah.
Could you imagine Jesus coming at you with a whip?
Yeah. That's the fear of God right there.
And flipping over your table. Yeah. I mean, just as he's walking your way, I've just never thought about it this way. Like, oh man.
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah.
This is going to go down. This isn't going to be good.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just really that you need to see that this really matters. Like, there are times where we need to tell people around us that this really matters. And so I'm going to choose to use my emotions in certain calculated ways. And you are kind of maybe not opening the floodgates of your emotions, but letting some of it go through.
And you know what I love about having Thomas at the table? We've got three generations here of leaders, and we are all learning how to follow Jesus better, how to continue to work on our leadership. And I think for our listeners who are wrestling a little bit with the speaking truth in leadership, how do I do that? How do I do it wherever God has me? Remember, this side of heaven, we are always working on these things, and not just a moral things that will help us to be a better person, but to truly be a strategic leader in the ways that God wants us to, in the ways that he's gifted us to. Yeah, I love that. And I love that you joined us today for Jesus-Centric Leadership. We really enjoyed our conversation today and look forward to next time. Have a great day.